He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right, Carl, welcome to the show.
Glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really happy to have you here, and I'll start this one the way I start them all. Tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
The first time, I actually didn't see anybody bend steel. I've been doing powerlifting competitions since probably 2007. And everything on my own. I've always had my own basement gyms. I've never had trainers. I think I did one or two training sessions with Ryan Chelly out of Pittsburgh. He was a all around super strong power lifter at 198. I think he had like a 1900 pound total. And I got in with him to kind of dial in some things with my bench. But my first experience with steel bending was trying to rectify a problem I had with my setup on bench, where I was taking the weight in a bad position, and I lost it a little bit, and I recovered on the bench and tweaked my wrist a little bit. So I started researching probably 2007, maybe like late 2007, about specific ways to strengthen your grip and your wrist strength, because I really never had a strong grip. And despite all the things I've done, like I've been involved with weightlifting in some capacity since I was probably 12 or 13 continuously. Wow. And like over 30 years at this point, but I still had a weakish grip. And I found Iron Mind, and I saw their grippers, and I started reading everything I could on their website. They had a lot of good information, and I read about the grippers, and I got one of their catalogs in the mail. And I saw this thing called steel bending. I'm like looking through the catalog. I think I still have that catalog, and I'm looking through. I'm like, all right, I just couldn't process how would you do that? Like you're gonna bend something, and I couldn't process how that would happen. And I sent away for their bag of nails.
Yeah.
I remember the day I got it. I went down into, this is at my old house, like two houses ago, and down into my basement gym and opened it up. I'm just looking at this. I'm like, okay, I went through the white nails and the green nails, and I could see, all right. I still didn't understand that you could wrap the edges with anything. I just thought you were going to be bending this stuff with your hands. And I'm like, all right, you can do this. Maybe I can do this. And I got to the yellow nails, and I'm like, this is going to be tough. And I held up the red nail, and I'm like, I just couldn't process it. And even when I figured out you could wrap it, I couldn't process that you could actually bend a red nail. And I actually didn't see anybody bend in person probably for another almost two years.
Wow.
And I got onto the grip board maybe 8 or 9 months after I started. So it was just me sitting there just experimenting for several months, like very poor style, very poor technique. And I remember my first yellow nail bends. I was doing double overhand, and I was like way out here, and I was like trying to crank it down and like hit myself in the chin a few times. And I finally got the first yellow nail bend probably 6 or 7 months in the bending, which is crazy.
Wow.
It was just a little, like, just sticking with it. And that moment that it started to move, I still remember that. And just like a lowly yellow nail, I hung up in my kitchen for probably like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
Place.
Yeah. So had you seen double overhand before, or was that your instinct to kind of try to bend it like that?
I saw the John Brookfield thing, like I know a lot of people did.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really watching videos too much, and I was reading a little bit on the forums, but even back then I was working from early in the morning until like 3-4 o'clock, and then I was taking classes till 10 at night, and like just commuting, and I didn't have too much time to mess around watching videos. So I did what I could reading wise when I was on site, and I saw like out to here, like bending down, and I was thinking about getting up to here, and I just could, I really didn't have the flexibility to get up into a position like this.
Yeah.
And then I got into double underhand bending probably a month or two after I started, and that felt a lot more natural with my leverages.
Oh yeah. Oh, cool. When you first got the bag of nails, did you just twirl the nail up in a single wrap?
Yeah, I grabbed the wraps. I think I did double under. It was my first bag.
Yeah.
Grabbed it, maybe like Austin style, and then just like crushed it downward.
Yeah.
The whites were pretty easy. Green similar, but the jump from the green and the white to the yellow was crazy. If you don't have that actual background, or if you don't have that knowledge that you can get into that.
Yeah. Yeah. The wrapping was a mystery to me. That's what, like, it wasn't until I reached out to somebody on Instagram and they sent me like an old Tommy Jennings video. That's not even easy to find on YouTube, of him like breaking down how to wrap it and how to use a clamp and to chalk it and the whole thing. Like I did the same thing. I just, you know, whatever, 10 years later, I don't know. I just twirled it in the wrap and just tried to bend it like that, you know?
Yeah, Tom, like his video, when he put that video out, I was already doing this for several years. I remember when he came on the scene, he killed some big still, like, and impressively. But it made me rethink the time I take the wrap, and it really does make a difference. And
oh yeah,
I watched it, I think, two or three times, and just to kind of reset things. And because a lot of my training is abbreviated, and just there's just no time, and I might have like daily, like maybe 30 minutes to get a session in.
Oh wow.
With lifting and I have a log on the grip board that I post everything that I do, and
cool. Like
that I've done for the last maybe 7 or 8 years.
Oh yeah, nice.
Very, very limited.
But
it's realistically what I can do unless I wake up early and wake everybody up, or same thing, like dropping weights late at night, and
yeah,
two dogs and like barkers, and it's just not possible. So I've streamlined everything to try to get into the best way to streamline the process. And
yeah,
part of that with bending was giving bending its only day to really dedicate what you need to do to wrapping, because it makes that much of a difference.
Yeah.
Before just taking a bar and kind of loosely wrapping it. Same thing with the horseshoes. Like loosely.
Oh, yeah.
If you spend an extra 2 or 3 minutes on the wrapping technique, and a lot of the guys that really get into the wrapping talk about using vice-type apparatuses to really clamp it down, it makes a difference.
Oh, yeah. Yep, absolutely. What do you do for a living?
I'm a high school special education teacher.
Oh, right on. That's cool. My wife's middle school special ed.
Oh, that's great.
Yep. Yep. So are you back in the building? Are you fully remote with that right now?
We're in the building right now, but right now we were remote for the last week.
Yeah.
My kids went remote.
Yep.
So I have a remote responsibilities, and my kid was online, and
yep.
Their son's daycare closed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
gonna juggle, but thankfully we're in the building currently.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the winter's going to be rough, I think. It's it's hard, man. So you said you started weightlifting around the age of 12. Were you always an athletic kid? Did you grow up playing sports and stuff?
I started playing soccer, I think, when I was 5 or 6, and got into wrestling around 7.
Nice.
Through elementary school, football and wrestling through middle school, and I think around 6th or 7th grade, and when I saw Rocky IV in the movie theater, like when it came out in 84, 85.
Nice.
And my dad took me to see it. And I remember coming out of the movie theater, just like throwing jabs and
just shadow boxing.
Yeah, just a life defining moment. And got home that night, and we had a old house, like I think 4 stories, like really old. Crickety steps, and I was running the steps at night that night, and I remember him yelling like, "Go to bed."
Did you grow up in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Western PA, like Pittsburgh area.
Okay. So you even had a little extra pride for the Rocky movie, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it just, I started when we could actually get VCR tapes. I mean, I would be watching the tapes so much that the tapes just kind of dissolved.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I remember like watching those with my dad, like when, the, you know, when you'd still watch TV, I guess, like they'd show all five of them in a row one day or something like that. It was like, they're such classic movies. But all right, so take me through, you mentioned you're kind of like at an abbreviated training, just fitting it into your life as you can. What's like a normal training week looking like for you these days?
I'm commuting about total at like 2 hours. So yeah. Commute kind of wears you down, and then, you know, you're working, especially under the current circumstances. I have typically without shutdowns, in the past few years, maybe about 45 minutes before the time, like I'd get home and then I'd have to pick my kids up. And yep. Now my oldest son started school in kindergarten, and it changed things a little that I could get him a little earlier and take him with me and down here in my gym, and he could do a few things.
Cool.
My youngest isn't quite there yet, and there's just way too much still down here to be messing around. But I actually have a Sesame Street castle over here.
All right, yeah.
I have them under one of the squat racks where they can play, and I have some of my old He-Man stuff.
Awesome.
So I've been getting them more into this, into the routine, which lets me go typically 6 days a week. And
okay.
I've always done almost like a powerlifting oriented training style. I did Westside for a yep. lot of years, like a Westside hybrid.
Okay. Yeah,
I bought a lot of stuff from Louis Simmons and Red from Elite FTS. And I was, say for instance, with bench, I was stuck around 325 raw for 4 or 5 years. And this, when I incorporated the bands and the speed bench in, I went up from 325 to close to 350.
Wow.
It may be 2 months training with that. So that compensatory acceleration really helped me.
Yeah.
That got me into their style, but it's hard to do if you train alone. And
yep.
I've trained raw and single ply for powerlifting, and all of my single ply training is mostly by myself or with my wife.
Uh-huh.
I can get into really tight deadlift suits and squat suits and bench shirts. I've always gone really loose. So I've been able to kind of do bench shirts on my own with setting the bars high enough. And I have like a string on the back. I can pull it and get the shirt off and on.
Yeah.
But, with the raw training, it's a little bit different, and I can typically go a little higher frequency towards the 6 days a week with the shirted bench and stuff like that. It's 3 or 4 days a week.
Okay.
So regardless of what I'm doing for training wise, the last couple of years it's been raw, but I always try to do a bending day on Sunday, and I used to do a grip day on Saturday and Wednesday.
Oh, nice.
And it's just with the grip stuff, with the like V bar and the Iron Mind hub and fat bar and stuff like that. It's just time constraints kind of killed that. And
yeah,
I've always been somebody with hand size, just had a lot of trouble with doing fat bar stuff and blobs and stuff like that. So for me to make any progress, like on the Rolling Thunder, for instance, I have to devote a ton of time to it.
Yep. Yeah.
And the progress is pretty minimal.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All that stuff. Yeah. It takes a lot of time. Those are humbling apparatuses too. My God. Like it's just like, you think you can load it up, and it's different from like other lifts. I feel like you just hit a wall like it, and it's just like, nope, it's not moving. You know, it's like, it's like you could do it at like a pound below, and then you hit your limit, and it's just not moving.
Definitely humbling. And if you go to a grip competition, like the still bending competitions, the guys are great. Everybody's helpful.
But yeah.
If you're expecting the turn everything upside down and have a great competition that compared to some of the people who do these things, like unbelievably, it's just, you can't make it about placing and things like that.
Yeah. I'm
very competitive kind of person, but with grip, it's more of a, just something I like to do, especially with the hub and things that I can, David Horn's, grip tops, things yep. like I can be a little more competitive, but I like to deadlift, and I also like the axle deadlift, even though
yeah.
it's fun to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's cool. It's definitely like mixes it up. And, you know, I think Don Cummings put it perfectly. He said like the grip and the steel bending makes you strong in all angles, you know. It's just like, for, especially speaking from coming from a guy that's into grappling and wanted to get stronger for that purpose, like the idea of being like that functional strength, that's like a super important thing, you know, for like just wanting to be strong, or like the type of you know, I bring it up a lot on the show, but it's like they call it like farm strength or something, or old man strength, or all that, the type of strength that, you know, I guess it's like maybe tendon strength, but that's certainly what I feel like is being developed with the grip training and the steel bending specifically.
Yeah, definitely with the tendon strength with steel bending. I've, from the get-go, I can't remember where I heard it from, but trying to develop all styles and reverse bending, different styles of reverse bending, closed grip, double underhand bending, wide grip, like double underhand and modified, double overhand, modified, like closed grip, double overhand, almost every conceivable style really does make your tendons stronger, in my opinion. But if you specialize in one area, which I've done for stretches of time, even upwards of over a year, I've noticed I've had more issues when I switch off, or I'm getting too strong in a particular style. And thankfully, I've not had any double overhand major injuries, aside from some like elbow stuff and some shoulder things. Mm-hmm. One time, one of the muscles here like kind of popped, and I was coming back around, and it was a scary thing. But I don't think that really had anything to do with imbalances.
Yeah, it
definitely recommended to focus on all areas and don't become too strong in one particular thing, because there's a tendency with double overhand bending just to really blast through
the
caps or double pads, and you could be monumental in doing like way above a red nail, like king of all bastards, things like that, but can't do a grade 5 or a grade 8 bolt closed grip double underhand, and that could turn into a problem.
Yeah, for sure. That's something that keeps coming up, especially with you seasoned guys. At, you know, Adam Glass came on, made that point. Don made that point. You know, like you're making that point now. It's definitely something I've taken seriously, and have been working on developing those styles. And I hear some of the newer guys, you know, saying the same thing on Instagram and stuff like that. And not only just those three styles, but mixing in the brace bending with the mid and the long bar, like that stuff makes me feel like I'm getting real strong. You know, like I went through a real couple of months ago, I was really involved with, I got a whole bunch of 5/8 stock, and I was trying to go, you know, pretty short on that. And Don was like, that's when he directed me to your videos. And he's like, Carl's is one of the best mid length benders ever. So why don't we talk about some of that stuff right now?
I feel the same way about Dawn. Like it's like he's been fantastic, and his commitment is phenomenal. It's still an inspiration.
Oh like, yeah.
Even at this point in time, like I start feeling broken down, and to be able to watch people to pull me back in. But with David Horn's competitions that came out, Dawn talked to me, and you know, so let's like get back into this about 2 years ago. And I really did think that my mid bar bending and brace bending was done, because I think my best bend was around 2013. And at the time I was close to 40 years old and just hurting pretty bad at the time. And I think I got 21 and 7/8 or something like that. And pretty still, And I can't see myself getting past that. And I took a lot of bars down, like 19 inch, 20 inch range down close that just couldn't crush it. I actually have permanent bruises inside of my knees from the brace bending.
And oh, really?
Talked to my doctor who said, you know, it'll go away, or it never went away. It's been
really,
it's just been exasperated with that. But the brace bending is awesome. It's something that it's a personal battle against the steel that you have to plan ahead of time. You have also have to factor in what type of steel you're getting, what the source is. I've gotten some Metal Depot steel that's just been brutal. It was supposed to be hot rolled steel and it was bending like cold rolled steel.
Yeah.
Say like if maybe I was at a 24 inch level at 5/16 or 5/8,
yeah,
that I was expecting to blow through a 30 inch bar, and it was kind of stopping me, and it was springy. So you can just stop with that, or you can keep hitting it and change your attack plan with that. But that's the one of the beauties of mid bar bending, that you have to. And I back then I videoed most of my attempts, and I would watch them over and try to see where I was at, if I was really at this position. And my weight fluctuated, which really changed the leverages. I was
interesting.
When I started powerlifting, I think I was 220, and I got up to about 230, 235, and I was doing with the weights at that point. And I'm like 5'9", and I just didn't feel energetic. I was getting stronger, but I didn't think it was worth it. So I ended up cutting about 35 pounds, and I was around 190, 195.
Okay.
Most of the last 10 years.
Yep.
This past March, I started gaining some weight again, and 10, 15 pounds, which I got to cut.
Yeah.
The best thing I think about the mid bar bending is just at least transferable for myself to deadlift and squat. I would notice when I was kind of cranking around on this side, I would be building up this part right here, but yep. I would also notice that in the squat where I would be tipping a little bit. So if I wasn't cognizant, I would actually move the weights on the left out a little bit to kind of play it out and just put more emphasis to build this side up. I wasn't very, at least I didn't think I was very strong switching grips and things like that, but yep. I forced myself to at one point to try to add a few inches to the mid bar and switch sides, because I was too strong on one side, and it was creating, I think, imbalances on through the trap region.
Yep.
I started dealing with over the last like year or two.
I can get into
that a little bit later, but I also did the long bars. I started with the 5/8, and I took it above my head like this, the first bend I ever did, and put a towel here and bent it down like this.
Bent it over your head?
Yeah. It's just kind of ridiculous, but that was not really knowing what to do at the time.
Yep.
And seeing the guys on TV, like World Strongest Man, trying to do the neck thing. And eventually I got to the 3/4 stock, which is brutal. And
yep.
I tried to just same thing, trying different positions. And that's really what I like the most about it. Just taking notes and watching videos and maybe getting a little kink here and then building up a little confidence to say, oh, okay, I actually bent it, and then just really hitting it harder.
Yeah.
And with the long bar and even the mid bar, you have to go into this with an outlook that I'm not going to stop. I'm going to bend this. I'm going to hit it. It's going to hurt. And I'm just going to go after it.
Yep. And definitely.
The still does work hard in a sense that if you have the capacity and the ability to just keep blasting into it, you're gonna get movement and you're gonna improve on it.
Yeah. You know, yeah, it's something you touched on there. I was just thinking about tonight as I was doing a session, doing some snapping. And I always do my open on the same side, and I'm like feeling my tricep like get like really tense back there and stuff like that. I was like, you know what? I should maybe like put a pad on my other leg and like alternate these opens, and maybe I wouldn't be as fast, you know, but like I'd be developing on both sides.
I would definitely recommend it. And it's hard to do, because especially if you start getting strong on one side and start taking down shoes that you might have struggled with for a year or two, to go back to the beginner style and just really fumbling with that muscle memory and not being able to do anything.
Yeah. But
just picture yourself 7-8 years from now, like doing the same thing, hopefully, and it just being worse and creating more imbalances.
So yeah.
Even if it's like isometrics, where you're taking a position and you're trying to get that kink down.
Yep.
I would absolutely do that.
And with the mid and the long bar, how do you start those? I'm just curious, because I see some guys that kink it over their thigh, and then some guys that go over the knee. Yep. Nice.
This was the 20 millimeter bar that I, back in 2013 or 14, that I tried to take the number one spot on David Horn's list to go past Manthos.
Yeah.
I think he sent me some still in the mail, which was awesome. And I think there were four bars, and I got this to, at this point, I just couldn't get it. This would have been 20 millimeters by 31.25, I think it was.
Okay. Whew.
But here, I can't find any long bars. I have one around here somewhere. But with the mid bar like this, typically I can't do kinking on my knee, because I've had some major knee issues.
Oh, all right.
Ones I can, but I would take it down like this and just
go over your thigh. Yep.
Really take it behind like this and use one arm and just kink it. And probably about halfway up your hamstring.
Yep.
And I'm facing the same way, but my thumb's touching the end, and I'm just going to use that leverage and kind of sit back onto it. And you really have to condition your hamstrings when you're doing that.
Yeah.
And if you can get, I have a bar here. Just a half inch bar, but say if this were like a 3/4 inch bar or whatever.
Yep.
I'm going to take it up a little higher on my hamstring. And probably about 1/3 of the way up. And I'm going to get it as close as I can to the end, and then just like crank it like that. And I keep going. And once I get around, I'm just going to use both hands if I can get it. And I'm just going to come back around and keep going as far as I can. And I've always been, of the style with the long bar to do a chest crush, which.
Yep.
I don't know if I would really recommend doing that, but
yeah,
I would take probably a small hand towel first under here, a thicker towel, and just crush it as much as I can, because I can never really get into the leg crush with the water bars, because I couldn't
get
really good position with that.
Yeah.
That's with the mid bars, I could get a little better positioning.
Yep.
Leg crush, but the leg crush is just, once you can get to the leg crush, it's a matter of just flipping the pain signal off and just hitting it.
Yeah.
there's nothing easy about it.
No, definitely not. The those few bars that I did, I think I got down, I think I did 5/8 by 25 or 26, and That was a struggle. You know, what's just to talk about like how weird the mind is. So I had one cut and it was stalled out just like, and I couldn't get it going for like 3 weeks. I'd be down there like once a week, twice a week, like laying into this thing with everything I got. Cut the same stock. I cut one to 27 or 26, whatever it was, just an inch longer. And I blew through that one. So then I knew I could do it physically. So then I went back to the shorter one and completed it right there. But I just needed that confidence of doing one that was close. And it just gave me the ability to give it. It's just, I find the bending to be such a mind game, man. It's just crazy.
It is. It definitely is. And I know I heard some people talking about pushing through the pain. Like, and I think Don's feats are incredible, what he's been doing with the volume bending. Unbelievable. But
oh yeah,
I know for myself, I have passed that point several times and gone way past what I think my natural ability level would be. But I think also I'm paying for some things now that I've done like 10 years ago, and injuries are cropping up, like things that otherwise wouldn't have happened. So along those lines, I think, and I going back 10 years, 15 years, I would have done the exact same thing because I love doing this. Like my whole entire basement is turned into just a hybrid still bending fire. And it's been like this for 20 years.
But yeah,
I would probably have a little more focus on long-term health and longevity. And
yeah,
the big bends that I've tried that kind of mess things up, I think a little, I might not have gone after those. I know some of the certs I was going after on Bender's Battlefield back in like 2010, 11, 12.
Yeah.
One, it was a 01 drill rod. I think it was 5/16 by 6 inches. I'm not exactly sure, but it was 600 pounds or 600 pounds, and all iron mine pad wraps. And I kinked and I was coming around on the crush and barely moving it. And I was getting it and I got it to about 100, 110 degrees. And I just heard a pop right here. And I was pretty in tune with things with the bench press and stuff and how that was affecting. And I couldn't bench press for about 6 or 7 weeks after that. But that was a point where I was hitting this as hard as I could and just harder and just harder and just going after it because I wanted to get that cert. And
yeah,
the popping just, it kind of went numb, but I kept going at it. And I had problems with that and continue to have problems with it. And which also with some of the volume I've done, I don't know if you heard about the Iron Mine streak, Red Nell streak.
Don sent in two questions to ask you, and one of them is about the streak, the Red Nell streak.
I'll show you.
Yeah, let's talk about this thing.
Here, I got you on a Chromebook here.
All right. There's a bucket of reds.
Yeah, could you see the bucket?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, these are all the red nails that I bent during the streak.
Wow.
I think it's 335. And I started doing this after my cert. And, you know, like I said earlier on, nothing really came easy to me. It took me 8 months to bend a yellow nail. Said I definitely was not one of the people who came out strong and just blasted through steel. And I liked it from day one. And I wanted to turn this into something. And I think I think this is probably year 13, consistently bending, not stopping.
Damn.
And
you're one of the few, man. I feel like that. Like, it seems like some guys come in and out. It doesn't seem like too many guys are in here 10 plus years.
And I don't. David Wigram is definitely one who inspired me from the beginning.
Yep.
guy, and I think he's still doing things. He's on to other things now, but he's been consistently strong with everything.
I had him on a couple episodes, like probably 10 episodes ago or something like that. And he was just getting back into a few things. And he was talking about maybe doing a red reverse. He was really into reverse bending at the time. I'm not sure what he's up to right now, but he was definitely doing a bunch. And then also some like really kind of like mini scrolls with some small six inch nails, like putting S's into them and stuff, like really, really crazy stuff.
Yeah, so from the beginning, I wanted to be the best I could be with bending, and I'm like you mentioned earlier, and I'm one of the people who gets into something and dives in and just studies and reads everything I can about something, and then kind of that's the unwavering focus, and it's yep. kind of been like that up until about a year ago when. Just life, you know, everything, kids, yeah. age and things like that are starting to really toil things down. But back in, I think I started on the red nail in 2010, and it took me about 2 years to get to that point, maybe a little longer. And this was with a lot of experimentation with wraps. And I always was a proponent of thin wraps. I did a few certs with FBBC with some of their double arma bars. I think the bastard bar and the big was with just single wraps, maybe 1.25 wraps. Uh-huh. Felt the right way with those. And I liked the cool. Ironmind pads because minimal wraps, you could still feel it. You were still tearing your hands up. Like I would bust my knuckles open after every bend I would do for probably 3-4 years. And it was part of it. It was great to be able to see that and just to see how your fingers adapted to
yep.
it. Same thing with double armhand bending. Like my pinky fingers have grown probably 2 or 3 millimeters on the oh, end.
Wow. Just to yeah.
do that crush. And with the red now, I wanted to realistically seeing my capabilities not being like a natural world-class talent, I wanted to do something that maybe nobody could do ever and use some of my personality traits, knowing that if I could get this thing rolling and stick with it, that this might never happen again. And I decided to per Ironmind's certification within 60 seconds doing a with single wraps, no band.
Yeah, no bands, yeah. No,
like fingers, like no wraps on anything.
Yeah.
To cert every single week as long as I could.
Okay. And
I think for the first 3 or 4 years up until 2014, I did a Ironmind like bend under their official certification rules every week.
Oh, and wow.
Just, it was easy the first couple of years because that back then I tried to do a, three cert bends within 60 seconds. So I oh, wow. wrapped up like three bars and had bands on them and took the bands off. And I think I got two at 41 seconds.
Oh,
and
wow.
Last one stopped me at like 1 minute, 10 seconds. And
oh, that was three reds.
Tried to do it after that. So it wasn't hard for the first couple of years.
Yep.
When my first son was born, I did one of the bends in the hospital.
That rules.
Wife was yelling at me, like, and then she understood. And then, like, this was on very little sleep.
Yeah.
I remember doing one of the bends, like, right by the door. And then I got it, felt really weak. It was probably 30 or 40 seconds. And then the nurse came in right afterwards. And it was just a lot of things standing in the way, probably around that year 4 or 5. Then I took it out to 10 days and I kept going. One Ironmind red nail every approximately 10 days and just bending it according Damn. To the rules. And then 2017, I think it was, I took it out to 2 weeks and 17, 18 was still okay dealing with some new injuries, but the last year or so was tough. And I had like just a lot of elbow injuries and things that were popping up, and things in my neck over the last 2 years got kind of bad. Still dealing with some of that stuff. But this past September was 10 years of continuous red nail bends. I average it out to every 10 days over the last 10 years under their cert rules. And there were a few times where I made an attempt, and one attempt was on vacation. I think we were in Virginia Beach. And it was really late at night, and I took an attempt, but stopped at maybe 30 degrees on the kink and couldn't transition to it.
Yeah.
And then a knuckle busted open. So I wrapped another one up and just kept hitting it. And
yeah,
still got it. But
that was
something I thought that maybe make a mark, you know.
It's hell yeah.
Just something crazy enough. And didn't start out 10 years. I think it started out with a goal of 5 years.
Yeah.
And then it just, when I hit 5 years, it was, let's just keep doing this until I can't do it anymore. And then probably like 8 or 9 years, it became 10 years. And
that's nuts, man.
Back at all these, I took a picture of all the reds out on my deadlifting platform, and seeing them all out like that, it's just kind of insane. Just thinking back over the last 10 years, like
day
in and day out, week in and week out. And I had a PRKI surgery and still did one of the attempts. I actually planned the bend around my eye surgery. So you had 2 weeks that you could get back to normal activities. And it was like 10 to 12 days. Stone surgery where I was like out, and it was a like invasive surgery, which was pretty rough, but still did it. I think it was 10 days after the surgery.
God damn, man. I don't think anyone's touching that one. Just the time investment alone, that I think that's, you're going down in history for that one. That's unbelievable.
About stopping, and it's driven me for so long.
I
knew that day was coming up, like that Sunday night, that it was going to be a red. It used to be every Sunday night, then it was every other Sunday night towards the end. But I knew that kind of kept me grounded. And
that's cool.
It was a weird experience.
That's
and I was
cool.
Afraid to stop because I knew how hard it was to get to that point. Also, getting to the red. And then I stopped bending the red nail. That might be it. I might never get back to that point.
Yeah.
Played into it too.
How many sets of reps did you go through?
Probably. I've always liked the stiffer reps.
Yep.
And I know some guys like EJ.
Bosley, yep.
Unbelievable. He would at Mike
Monster
competition back in 11. The night before the competition, he had I think it was a 3/8 by 7-inch bar, and just took these loose wraps and just started tearing into it. Crazy things I've ever seen. Unbelievable. But I never could really bend still with the loose wraps like that.
I was
more get amped up for it. Just some of my better bends, and I say better bends compared to some other people, like major benders, this might not even be like that impressive, but for like, especially some of the newer guys out are hitting these gold nails. Like there's no way I could have gotten a gold nail, especially with flexibility issues.
Yeah.
I would probably go through a pair of wraps every 2 months.
And
I would try to, I didn't do a ton of volume. Initially I did, but the last 5 or 6 years, probably 3 or 4 bars per session. And I have almost every single bar. I have 5 or 6 Home Depot buckets full of bars, like double overhand, double
underhand,
and reverse training for Dawn's competition. I got back into reverse.
Yeah.
Never really got into that, but with the wraps, I've always preferred to get them tight
and
just as consistent as possible throughout without major flaws or
anything
like that.
Yeah, for sure. Damn, that's really cool. Like, and I totally relate to just like wanting to make your mark in some kind of way, like not in an egotistical kind of way. It's just like in a passionate way, you know, like I just really, really get a lot out of this and just think it's cool. And I'm totally inspired by all you guys. And like, for Bud Jeffries, telethon the other day for the Noah's Army Foundation, I snapped 24 grade 8 bolts in a row and,
that's awesome.
And got the first person on David Horn's site for what's called the Silver Dozen, which is just 12 grade 8 snapped in a row. But I wanted to double it for just for my own mental pride or whatever. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. My hands were just healing, and then tonight they opened back up doing some stuff, but it is what it is. But yeah, man, so you've been in this for a long time. Like, let's just talk about like what's kept you in it. Is it just the feeling of what you get out of it, or also being an avid weightlifter, do you feel like you've gotten great strength benefits from bending? That's something that I'm fascinated with. Like, you think you're overall stronger guy because of all the time you've spent in bending?
Initially, I think the strength was an allure, just to overall body strength. And I remember the first year of red bending, I would get so amped up and be able to hit these bars. And then to go to the next level, to do the thicker bars with the 01 drill rod, like above the 5/16. And for a while there, it was just being able to get to that next step. And I felt like it got me stronger until I got to the point where I think I was going past my own leverages. And it's, at least with the double overhand, double underhand, I feel a lot stronger with. But with the longevity part, I had this feeling, especially during this streak, it's kept me going, and it's taken me through some times, maybe, you know, some difficult times with things I might encounter with work, with life, with kids. But having that there always to focus on took me through a lot of things. And along those same lines, being able to take 15 or 20 minutes and know that I'm going to blast into steel with 100% ferocity has kind of given me a balance and a lot of other things. And I think too, with some of the music that I play with bending, I save just for bending, with like Slayer and the like, and mostly Slayer.
Hell yeah.
a specific kind of focus.
Yep.
Back when I was trying to do some feats with the bending, and I remember like 12 or 13, where I was trying to cut the reds down and still do single iron mine pad bends. I can't remember if I had bands on or not. I probably had bands on, but it was just single iron mine pad bends. And I cut down a 6.5 pretty easy. 6 inches came pretty easy. And then 5.75 was a lot tougher. And I had to go like 2 months for that. Wow. And then 5.5 inches stopped me cold. And I spent one morning just going through every single motivational song and watching videos at the time, like the computer, and just going through this. And I think I spent 3 hours that one morning. I did my 5.5 inch and I was pacing and I was amping up for all this before kids, but going down into the basement and just blasted this. And that was kind of the focus for the whole entire week leading up to this. It was just a singular focus on that. And that's kind of guided things, I think, for the first 5 or 6 years, where I could pinpoint things like that. And lately it's been more, not really breaking PRs or anything like that. Still going to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
That I can do, but, having things like dance competition, things like that to train for and actually be able to do, I think really helps.
Yeah.
And it's with the brace bars and things like that. The thing that blew me away was when, like I mentioned earlier about the mid bar,
yeah.
When I got into David Horn's competition, and I'm terrible with like actual numbers unless I do it a million times, like talk about it. But it was, I think I was in the fourth spot on David Horn's like mid bar when he was sending out the rated still. And
okay.
I wanted to finish in the top five so bad with this. And I think it was I've been a 25 inch, a 5/8 by 25, like harder still.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it rated. And then Michael Rogowski,
Yep.
Passed me up, like after I passed him up on it. Got into the five spot and I was six. And I had one more bar. I ended up cutting it down and I have it somewhere over there, but I got it. I think it was 10 or 11 pounds over, like to get into the fifth spot. And I just ran out of time. And it was just a brutal bar, but
yeah,
to get back into that level, like a year or two ago was fantastic. And it just like reopened the fire, like the desire to do that, which I thought was done years ago.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. It's so cool, man. Like, my introduction to David Horn was Daniel Strauss, who's a British jiu-jitsu black belt, has a podcast called the Raspberry 8 Podcast. And he had David Horn on that just a couple months before COVID hit and everything. And I was just like fascinated by it, you know, like I was just like, God damn, this guy's the coolest ever. Like he just had so much of a variety and background and strength and everything. And he's totally into jiu-jitsu now, like, cause his daughter trains. And, so he's got all these ideas about steel bending and steel snapping for grapplers. And, you know, now I communicate with him on Facebook and have, competed in a few of his contests. It's so cool. Like it's, I never figured I'd know the guy to some, I mean, that might be a stretch cause everything is just like this virtual connection, but, yeah, it's just what he does for the sport is so cool.
Oh, absolutely. He's definitely an inspiration with steel bending and myself, like unfortunately getting closer to 50, that just seeing somebody still doing this, like older,
yeah,
really means a lot. And to not think, you know, I see myself lifting and doing everything I can and hopefully still doing some form or iteration of steel bending when I'm 60 or 70.
Yeah.
In some form and still showing the kids and like trying to help them and do stuff like that. I don't plan on stopping, but to see somebody so strong and so competitive, they 10 or so years older than me, is fantastic and just very motivating to me.
100% for sure. Just looking here at the questions Don sent in. So he said, talk about the 10 years in a row of bending reds. Talk about his double underhand, his brace style, which we kind of covered, and the Beast of the East comp, the Bay State Bash, and the Michigan comp. You're the only person to do all three competitions. So why don't we talk about steel bending competitions a little bit?
Okay, the Beast in the East. I remember back when Mike Kraling had his competition, there was Beast in the East 1 and Beast in the East 2. And I think it was 2010-11 or 11-12. And the second one, they had a weight limit. It was 200 pounds. So they had lightweight under 200 and heavyweight over 200. Uh-huh. And I drove out and the night before to Philly and took a scale with me. And I was right around 200 pounds and I was trying to cut to do the competition.
Yeah.
And lightweight class, it was me, Richard Bean, and Andy Thomas. And in the heavyweight competition, it was EJ, Mike Kraling and Chad Rakiki, who's also another steel bending beast. And like all around, everybody in the competition was tough. And we weighed, I think I weighed 198.5. So I got into the lower weight class and we went through everything. I think overall I finished first in the lightweight class, and overall I think I finished third. But
nice.
Mike Rindelay was the judge on the horseshoes, and my last horseshoe bend was a St. Croix Ford's light plane 3. Yeah. And just took it down like right at the last minute, like last second. And I think it was so close for 1-2-3 overall that if I would have took my double underhand 10 pounds heavier, I would have been like right at the top with the
wow. three,
Mike and Chad Rakiki, who I think got second overall.
Huh.
It was fantastic to actually be in a competition like that and see these guys who you're interacting with online.
Yep.
And Mike just hit this double underhand bar and just was blasting it all out, and it just like lost consciousness and fell down. And it was unbelievable. It was like to see that level of intensity also at that time, like 3-4 years into bending, like had a lasting influence on me. And here's a guy that you respect and who's rating all this steel, just to give 100% like that was,
that's cool.
And within the community. And that's also illustrative of just what it takes to get to that level and to be a competitor like that. But that was my first bending competition.
Yeah. And,
the next one was out in Massachusetts, which I think that was the first competition I went to head to head with Don.
Oh, okay. And
Don is a beast with all his bending styles. And with this competition and at Don's competition the following year, which was 2 years ago, he won every event except double underhand, which I beat him in both double underhand, like in both competitions.
Oh, wow.
But the one in Massachusetts, we did the mid bar. I think it was 5/8 by, it might have been like 25 or so or something. I can't remember. But I think he had me, we were like 30 seconds and 40 seconds or something like that. And I had trouble on the kink, like hitting it. And then once I got the kink, I just blew through it. But
oh, wow.
One was just seamless. He was just like hitting it and just blowing right through.
That's awesome.
We did the competition in Massachusetts.
What town was that in, just out of curiosity?
What, say that again?
What town in Massachusetts was it?
I can't remember. We stayed in Framington.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So out by Boston.
This was like my wife and I's vacation.
Nice.
she came out to the competition with me, and then we ended up going back out the other night just to.
Cool.
That was our vacation.
That's nice.
It was a great time. And the following year was Dawn's competition, and all around, unbelievable. Like I used to think the Beast in the East was like the best test of overall steel bending. Dawn took it to another level.
Yeah.
We drove up again to Michigan, and I, after that competition, like after the steel long bar bending, I couldn't move. I had to sit down literally for like 2-3 minutes, and
yeah,
I was gassed. But he put on the all around just fantastic, just test of everything.
Yeah.
With the double underhand bending, I think we both did a bastard double underhand.
Wow.
I think I got mine to 35 degrees, and I think he was pretty close on it.
Nice.
Once again, like we were close on that. His double overhand was off the charts. I think he took like a well over 500 pound bar down pretty easily. And
yeah.
Just, all around, it's great, like competing against him, but
yeah,
he's taking himself to another level, and it's great to see that in person. And I love the intensity and just the focus, because I was always like that focus. Yeah. But Dawn is researching areas of like still bending history, which is fantastic, and somebody rare that's gonna carry it on and kind of emulate for generations to come.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, finding his Instagram was a huge wake up call to me. Like, I think I'd probably just be messing with like double overhand if I hadn't discovered Don's Instagram and then been lucky enough to talk to him on the podcast and on Instagram and stuff like that. He was between him and directing me towards David Horn, like that really opened up my eyes to all the styles. And I love that aspect. Like taking it back to jujitsu, the fact that I, you know, like it's kind of broken down into like no gi, like the submission grappling style, like more like MMA or whatnot. And then with the gi on, like, which looks like kind of judo and stuff, like just the fact that I had those two facets to study, or then even if I could divide it more, like if I want to just work my wrestling, I could do that. You know, I love like just having that variety in the things I'm passionate about. It's just so cool. Like already just in these, like since May or whenever I started, well, like I've had my few weeks of being obsessed with horseshoes. Like that's all I wanted to do, you know? And then like just had my obsession with double, like I just love the styles. I think it's cool. And I get the most out of talking to you guys that are like heavily into all the styles. It's cool.
What's your best horseshoe so far?
I think I did a just a 180 a St. Croix light number 2, because I ordered them by accident thinking they were ultralights on someone's recommendation. What's that?
A light rim 2?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty tough shoe, yeah. Especially for not doing it that long.
Yeah, I mean, I just... Like, I think it's one of those cases where, like, I don't think there's a few guys that we all start around the same time, and I joke about us being bending class of 2020 because we're all doing fairly well and we communicate with each other. And I don't think there's anything particularly like special about us. I think it was the perfect storm between having very limited stuff to be able to do, time on our hands, and access to guys that are kind enough to teach us, and YouTube. More and more people are posting everything, so there's no secrets in it, you know what I mean? So it's like, if I want it, like if you are a student of the game, it's all out there, you know? And that's like what I'm trying to help too with all the bending tips that I've been releasing, having my guests do, not me, but like having the guests do, is like they send in a little bending tip and then I release it on Instagram and on YouTube. So Don did a leg crush. He bent a 10-inch wrench leg crush like that. And Mike Rogowski did some mid bar. I've had my friend Dan from the UK did a snapping video just the other day. Delmar Carter did a rapping video. You know, so I think just that access to information is definitely just like helped it evolve a little bit, where people are bending a red nail within more like 6 months than it maybe, you know, like last year it would take people a year or something like that. I think it's just, you see it in everything, right? Like, wouldn't you agree? Like there just comes in waves where like all of a sudden the level is just bumped up a little bit. Like I've seen it in jujitsu 10 times over, like where, you know, like the white belts would just murder it. Like the white belts of today would kill the, you know, mid belts of yesteryear or something, you know?
Yeah, and it definitely is out there with the information. That's probably the one thing I think, if I were coming out now, that I would regret that not to participate with. That was one of my favorite things from the beginning, was just the kind of experimentation approach, even though it was pathetic, with like going back to that yellow nail example, taking months to bend a yellow nail.
Yeah.
Just fighting for it. And just, that was one of the things that stood out for me. But I think with the safety aspect, definitely just learning proper technique. And like with me out here with the yellow and just cranking myself in the face a few times.
Yeah.
going through that experience definitely made me appreciate the jumps, and the jumps were slow at the beginning.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have resources to go through aside from the insert that was with the Iron Mind bag of nails, which I kept reading over and over. But yeah, with getting into like a personal journey with steel bending, it's just about resetting expectations, I think, because you are, with all the information out here, going to get to your goals faster. And it's a matter of what you do when you get to those goals. Are you going to like keep pushing through, or maybe adjust your style if you're double overhand, like try to learn some different techniques with reverse double under. There's so many different things to do with the horseshoes, and even switching sides with the horseshoes and with the mid bar, the long bar.
And the snap in. Did you ever get into much snapping? Or
I think it was Dawn who did the red nail snap 2 years ago. And I never thought of snapping a red nail. I just looked, I'm like, what? I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
All that time. And I was just blown away by that. But then I started doing it and getting into the snapping. And it's definitely a workout.
Yeah.
And overall body conditioning. But unfortunately, it's that I want to do it more, but with time constraints, I can't really do it. If I'm snapping, then I can't do anything else. And that's why I'm not really getting into it. But that's a great thing. And also with David Horn, with some of the competitions.
Yep.
Fantastic what he's doing and getting people into it.
It's awesome. It's so cool. All right. So we reached pretty much the end of the show. So I usually wrap it up with what I call the medley. So this is just a rapid fire series of questions you might've heard on other episodes. So first question, favorite thing to bend?
Favorite thing or favorite style?
Well, favorite thing. We'll get into the styles probably next.
Horseshoes.
Nice. Yeah. When I had Robert Najedli on, I think that might have been when I went on the horseshoe tear immediately.
And let me show you this real quick. This was almost 10 years coming. This is a SSP 8x18 000.
Ooh, yeah.
And this was the first bend I got. I think I did this back in May, and I wasn't expecting to get this. And this was something I tried to cert on back in 11, 12, 13. And
my
best was like 150. And I took it down, but I didn't video it.
Oh, man.
So still got a bunch of other ones like 140, 150. But this is probably the focus for the next year.
All right. Hardest thing to bend for you?
Probably short bars, like not spikes, but the half inch by 8 to 14 inches.
Okay.
The leverage points are a little bit different than mid bar or long bar, but that's probably been the challenge with that.
Yeah. All right. Strongest bending style for you?
Right now, double underhand with the strongest bar I've ever bent, double overhand, was probably rated 500 or 505 with Iron Mind pads.
Yeah.
Double underhand was a little bit less than that, but double underhand consistently, I think, with the difficulty comparatively of the bending style. So probably double underhand.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, from day one, has double underhand always been comfortable for you more than reverse?
Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting.
Reverse has never felt good. When I was doing training for Dawn's competition, I took my first wraps touching grade 5 reverse.
Uh-huh.
And I have my boxes over there, like the Home Depot bins. I think I have 3 full of double overhand.
Yeah.
Full of double underhand bends, and then I have like a cardboard box of reverse bends.
Yeah,
we haven't spent much time with it.
It's just I always kind of like have a mental poll of like everyone I'm talking to, and like it seems to be like kind of split. I've doubt some people, but obviously the double overhand people out for the most part feel like strongest that way. But then it's really split, almost 50-50, whether people are prefer the double underhand or the reverse. I'd almost say it's tilted to reverse. Most people I talk to feel like reverse is their second strongest style. But I also struggle reverse. I feel like that's my weakest style for sure.
I like getting into it when I was training for the competition. It felt weak for 2 or 3 weeks doing a quarter inch or 17/64 inch O1 drill rod. Uh-huh. But getting into after that third week, like just taking the grade 5 bolts down, it like conditioning your thumb pads.
Yeah.
Kind of seamless. It was just getting that the repetition in, I think. But with the overall tendons with the double underhand and double overhand, I think it's just a matter of getting a few reps in.
Yeah. Did you do are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
When you did reverse, did you have right hand forward or left hand forward?
I would always go left hand, and I'd be low. So I actually like wraps touching better. It just felt like better for me, and I can kind of bend it over right here.
Yep. I was actually just bought some just this evening. Earlier, I was working on the reverse, just trying to get it up a little stronger. I bought some of these timber spikes. You ever use those? Know what those are?
Yeah. I had the galvanized timber spikes, a big box.
And yep.
Galvanized ones are tough.
Just something that's easier than like a 60 penny common nail that I can, you know, train volume for the reverse, because I really want to get that style up. And I was, for some reason, even though I am righty, I was finding I felt stronger right hand forward and pushing with the left hand. I don't know. It felt weird.
Another thing too, just to switch back and forth.
Yeah.
I'm stronger like this, but sometimes I'll start like this just to get a kink and then just finish it off.
Oh, funny. Yeah. I was at David Horn. Actually, the new steel shredder that starts in a few weeks is a completely unbraced snap like this. So it's a reverse crush and then a reverse open away from the body, then a reverse crush. Snapping something like that would be so hard. Oh man, looking forward to it, but it's going to be brutal. All right, weakest bending style, we kind of just touched on that. So something outside of bending, weightlifting, strength sports in general that you enjoy to do?
I've always volunteered for Special Olympics, like dating back to being in high school and going through college. Now I coach Special Olympics, do track and field.
Oh, right on.
And trying within my own school to get unified sports teams to try to improve inclusivity, cool. Things like that. And
nice.
always trying to teach acceptance and going beyond your own personal limitations.
That's cool. That's really cool. All right. What's the one bend that's got away so far?
I would say it was this one.
Yeah.
I've actually done it, but it hasn't technically counted. But this is probably the one that I've lost sleep over. Because when I got onto the top 20 horseshoe list back like seven, eight years ago, it was with a St. Croix Forge regular plane 000 shoe. Time, I think, ranked 9th. And slowly I kept getting knocked down the list. And just recently somebody bent, I can't remember what they bent, but I got knocked out of the top 20.
Man.
Right back in the thick of things, like after all this time. So this is probably it.
Who's the strongest person that you know?
I have no idea. I would have said probably my grandfather.
Nice.
When I was younger. He worked in a stone quarry. Massive forearms, never lifted weights or anything like that. He was probably about 5'6", 5'7", just massive, like just unbelievably strong naturally.
Awesome. Yeah, that's like, I always get a variety of answers, like, and those are the ones that I like, which is just like, you know, some guy from my town or like my grandfather or something like that. I enjoy hearing about the big names too, but like that's I always enjoy when people have answers like that one. All right. Best piece of advice you were ever given could be about bending, strength stuff, or life in general.
Just to be true to yourself, to go to sleep at night, you know, knowing that you've done the best that you can, and that, like the saying goes, be true to thine own self.
Yeah. Nice. That's a good one. All right. Well, I don't always ask this one, but since you already brought it up a little bit, is what do you listen to while you're bending? Because I'm a big, big music guy. So
it's a weird combination. since I got married, my wife lives in a more rural area, Western Pennsylvania.
And
I was always anti-country.
Yeah.
But into country music since.
Okay.
I took her to a Kenny Chesney concert. So there's country stuff that I've listened to. But mainly I would say it's probably a split between Slayer, which we also went to see their last concert.
Crazy.
In Western PA.
Nice.
Their farewell tour.
Yep.
We were probably like 10, 15 rows back from the stage. It was great. So Slayer and like Survivor, Frank Conti, Rocky Music.
Nice. That's awesome. All right. And lastly, what's the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails?
Probably recently, since I got up this way, I go to Tractor Supply and typically buy all kinds of different horseshoes. And the elderly ladies who was ringing me up, it's like, oh, what kind of horses do you have? I don't have any horses. And she's looking at, she's like, you don't have any horses? No. And I was kind of looking at her just like, okay. And she's like, what are you doing with all these horseshoes? it's like a hobby. I tried bending the shoes. And she just
so good. She probably thought you're like gonna make a coat rack with them or something. All right, awesome. So in closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
I thought about this. I think Andy Thomas.
Okay,
let me get in touch with him.
That's a name I don't even know, so that's cool.
He was a fantastic horseshoe bender. I saw him back in the Beast in the East. We communicated a lot back then on Bender's Battlefield.
Nice.
But I just so focused and just unbelievable intensity and ferocity, which I just trained with him a little bit back then. And
cool.
So very generous with communication and tips and things like that. But I know he has a YouTube account.
Okay.
And I could try to find that, but I think he's been out of bending for a while. He got back into doing some shoes a few years ago.
Yeah.
But a good guy with all around bending and just
awesome experience. Yeah, I'll try to track him down. That'd be cool. All right. Tips or advice for beginner benders?
Like some of the stuff I said with getting started off right, that times have changed with the journey, with everything that's out there, with all the connectivity with the internet and stuff. Just build up your base level. Thinking back to what I did, I tried to do all around. I wanted to be strong in every single area, and I wanted to continue to get stronger. I kind of slacked a little with reverse, but I did do some decent reverse bends when I just did it. Just didn't feel right. But I do think reverse bending is important for overall strength, just all styles. And go easy on the double overhand, because even with me I know a lot of guys have said to watch the thick wrap stuff, which is absolutely true. But I, from day one, was almost single wraps with just incrementally harder steel. And after 12, 13 years of doing this, like, things just, there's no way about it. Like, you can't really stay healthy unless you're like a machine.
Yeah. With it.
And just take things slow, build your base up, and have a few goals, like get to some competitions. If you can get to a steel bending competition, it will be one of the best days of your life.
That's awesome.
Like I was just longing for another steel bending competition after that Beast in the East, until we had Massachusetts one with Kevin, and then Dawn's competition was fantastic. It was just to hang out with guys during the day like that. It's just, you'll be talking about it for a long time. If you have a chance to get to a competition, just do it.
That's cool. All right. Where can people find you as far as social media, if they have questions and stuff like that, if you want to be found, I guess.
I was never really big on social media and stuff like that. I have a YouTube channel. I would just post up some things every once in a while. Never really try promoting anything.
Yeah.
My YouTube moniker is Steelbender, Steelbender 74.
Okay.
And cool. I still update some of the things on there, but it was mostly just like certification stuff and some lifting things like that.
Awesome. All right. And lastly, is there any events, brands, or gear, anything you want to shout out?
I think along with the lines of Special Olympics, there's some called Best Buddies, which it's a program which is an extension of Special Olympics, and Best Buddies helps match up kids with intellectual or developmental disabilities with kids without, to try to establish some inclusive practices and friendships. And that's something that could happen in schools or colleges, but there's something called eBuddies, which is a program that would kind of create like a virtual friend, like somebody could talk on Meet or Zoom. And this is for students in high schools, colleges, and adults. And especially with the times now, with everything going on with the seclusion and go out, this is like something, it's a critical need.
Wow.
Myself in the schools.
Yeah. But
knowing from adults with intellectual or developmental disabilities, they might not have anybody to talk to. So something simple, just registering and like just calling somebody or just doing like a meet like this and just talking about similar interests would be huge. And
I have cool.
It's https / www.ebuddies.org/apply.
All right.
The website's that'll take you right to the like place, and you just put your information in.
Okay. And
from what I understand with this, speaking to the organization I'm working with, there's like a 15-to-1 need that just needing volunteers for this. Like there's so many adults and kids that are trying to get in this program. There's just not enough people to match them up with.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll definitely get that address from you, and I'll put it in the show notes, for the description on YouTube and all the other stuff. So hopefully we can get that word out and get some more people doing that. That's a really admirable cause. That's cool. All right, Carl. Well, that's it, man. Well, I had a great time talking to you. I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, me too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I hope I'd like to have you back on one day. I've been sort of just cycling through people that I've had on. I just had Don on for the second time last night, and that'll come out Thanksgiving Day just for like a little bonus episode. So let's stay in touch, and yeah, maybe I'll have you on with Don or somebody like that. Like I want to do some like group ones, and you know, just shoot the shit, you know. All right, well, have a great rest of the night, Carl.
You too.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Thank you.